you just heard, I focus on the first chapter of Thessalonians just now. The chapter talked about all the wonderful works that they had done and all the thanks that Paul had given to God, you know, on their behalf. Today, I want to focus on us individually and the struggles and challenges that we face on a day-to-day life, you know, and who we should strive to be for, you know, as a congregation. But now I want to talk about us individually. I mentioned I was in Arizona. Well, I was there for a sales summit. Not as boring as it sounded. It actually wasn't too bad. But during the day and a half that I was there, they threw a lot of new information at us, a lot of information about the products and the services and stuff that we now can go out and try to, you know, share with potential clients. And one of the last talks then of the event, these two gentlemen were there and they were like, you know, we know you can do this. You know we threw a lot at you, but they put a slide up and it was, and I took a picture of it. You'll see some heads in the foreground, but they said, you got this. Now, it's grammatically incorrect, I understand, but you get the idea. You got this, meaning that they had just thrown all this information at us, but we could handle it. They had faith in us to go out and do this. You got this. And so I got to be thinking, you know, right, I said, that's a wonderful message to us as Christians. We've got this. We've got what we need to be successful. And so I started thinking about some of the examples that that are in the, you know, in the Bible that we could learn from. But I thought, you know, there's one person that really exemplifies this message that he had this. And that person was Moses. And I titled this Lessons from the Burning Bush. Moses needed encouragement. We think of Moses as being this, you know, great leader, and believe me, he was. But he needed some encouragement. It's been made famous by the movie of the Ten Commandments, and I actually went back and I, you know, on YouTube you can find everything, and I found just this scene, and it's about a three-minute scene all in all, him at the burning bush, and that movie, you know, it's a grand movie, and it, you know, for the most part tells a story, but there's an awful lot of dialogue and narrative, and you know, that is not found in the Exodus account, but they did it to make a movie out of it. And I always found it's interesting that the story about the burning bush, there's an awful lot of dialogue in there that they chose not to include. And why the producers or whoever did what they, you know, chose to do that, I'm not sure. But the idea is that, you know, they made up dialogue where there wasn't any. And then they omitted this dialogue. So the angel of the Lord speaks to Moses through a bush that burns but is not consumed. But what it left out during this, you know, that the movie left out was an awful lot of excuse making that Moses made. In fact, he made five excuses. He made five excuses during this passage here in Exodus. And these will all be found in Exodus chapter 3 and then also into chapter 4. That's where we'll spend the bulk of our remaining time here this morning. The first excuse that Moses made was, I'm not good enough. Exodus chapter 3, verses 9, 10, and 11 says, "And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me." This is the Lord speaking to Moses. "And I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" Moses has just been told he will be the deliverer. He'll go before Pharaoh, and he will demand that Pharaoh let God's people go. I read some thoughts that Moses really was just being humble here. Oh, who am I to go? But based upon the rest of the conversation that we're gonna cover here, I really don't think that's what this was about. Based upon Moses' history in Egypt, you got to think he wasn't really excited to go back there. those most of you know that story, but you know, he was raised by Pharaoh's daughter, even though, but he was raised by his own actual mother, raised him, but he grew up a part of the Pharaoh's family. He was part of the ruling class there, but 40 years earlier, he had left Egypt. Why? Well, because he, another part that the movie, I think, gets wrong, you know, the movie, you know, makes it seem like Moses found out years into his life that he was actually a Hebrew. I don't think that's the case. I mean, he was raised by his Hebrew mother, and I'm sure that there were, you know, times where he was told. But then, why else would you explain when he saw this Egyptian taskmaster, attacking this slave from, you know, Israelite slave, he went out and he killed that taskmaster. But then, and then we know later that, you know, two other Israelites, brought it to, you know, hey, we saw what you did. And so for that reason, he left. And we're told that Pharaoh sought to kill him. So you got to think, all in all, he's not really enthused to go back to Egypt. Pharaoh, this is a very scary proposition. He was had a big army, a lot of followers, very, very intimidating person. And now, I think all of us would be in that situation, unsure about going back. But we make excuses regularly to get out of being asked to do certain things. But that pales in comparison to what Moses is being asked to do. Moses' statement would indicate that he didn't think that he was up to the task. He was now an old man. He was 80 years old at this point in time. He was 40 when he left Egypt. He was now 40. Another 40 years had passed. He's 80 years old. He's far removed from anybody that he might have really known in Egypt, and he doubted that he would be able to make anything change. But God responded in chapter 3, verse 12. He said, "But I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain." Right away, God was telling Moses, "You've got this. I'm so sure of it that because I'm going to be with you." Doesn't have to be your abilities, doesn't need to be anything about you. I'm going to be with you. And I'm so sure of it that he says, "You're going to come back with those people, and you're going to worship me, serve me, right from this very mountain." For that to take place, any obstacles which Moses was going to have placed in front of him, they would be overcome. Now, many times, we as Christians use the same excuse. Why should we just common Christian, go into the world and spread the gospel? Well, we try to excuse ourselves by pointing out our own shortcomings. But God will be with us, too, in our efforts. It's true that we in ourselves are insufficient for that. But we are nothing without God, but God makes us sufficient. Now, I use this word sufficient. It's not just because I chose that word, but 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 5 and 6 uses this terminology. "Not that we are sufficient in ourselves to claim anything as coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God." Verse 6 continues, "Who made us sufficient to be ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life." Remember what Christ did with the apostles themselves? They weren't smart men. They were laborers. They were fishermen. They were tax collectors. They just were regular, common folk in their society. But they were inspired by the Holy Spirit. In Acts chapter 4, verse 13 says, "Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, and perceived that they were uneducated, common men, they were astonished, and they recognized that they had been with Jesus." God had made the same provision to help us through Christ as the apostles had, and that Moses had. He will be with us. Matthew 28, verse 20, Jesus tells the apostles to go and teach, and he makes them a promise. He says that he will be with them always. It's a wonderful promise. It wasn't just given to them. It was given to all of us. So with Jesus helping us, how could we fail? In other words, you got this. You can do this. So, the next excuse is, I don't have all the answers. Verse 13 continues, and Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? Moses knew that if he went back to the children of Israel and told them that God had sent them, there were going to be people that would question that. They would wonder who this crazy man was that was back in front of them. It's just human nature. Moses knew this, and so that's why he asked. He was afraid they would ask God's name, and he didn't know how to answer. So 14 through 17 reads, God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob has appeared to me, saying, I have observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt, and I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. God told Moses how to answer the question. The phrase, I am that I am, has several different translations depending on the language. It means I am who am, I am he who exists. It means the eternal who passes not away. Regardless of how that phrase is kind of interpreted or translated, it all focuses on God's eternal nature and that God does exist. In chapter 3, verse 18, God says that they will indeed listen to his voice. Chapter 4, verses 30 and 31, I'm jumping ahead just a little bit. And we're told that this does happen. Aaron spoke all the words that the Lord had spoken to Moses and did the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the people of Israel and that they had seen their affliction, they bowed their heads and worshipped. They believed that Moses was who he was. Once again, do we do this today? Do we use this excuse today? We try to excuse ourselves by saying our knowledge is very limited and we might not know how to answer a question if we're asked. But we have a responsibility to be able to give an account for the faith that's in us, to give an account of why we believe what we believe. Mark 16, verses 15 and 16 says, and he said to them, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. Here, Jesus is telling his disciples, those that were alive, those that were to come, and those that are here today among us. He's saying we have a responsibility to spread the good news of the gospel. Just in the case of Moses, we have no reason to say, what shall I say? We're saying that we don't know what we did in order... when we say this, we're admitting two things. We're admitting that... saying two things that we really shouldn't be that eager to admit. First one is saying that we don't know what we did in order to become a Christian. And we're admitting that we're not fulfilling the commandment that Paul gave Timothy in 2 Timothy 2, chapter 2, verse 15. Do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a worker who has no need to be ashamed, rightly handling the word of truth. Also, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 tells us that we are always be ready to give an answer of the hope that is within us. The basics of the gospel are simple. God has given us what we need to be able to answer these questions. In other words, you got this. The third excuse, people won't believe me. Verse 1 says, and Moses answered, but behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, the Lord did not appear to you. Now, God has already promised to be with him, and he has told him how to answer their questions. So God responds to this excuse with several proofs of who he is. There in Exodus chapter 4, verses 2 through 9, where this is covered, he gives them three signs. He says, if you throw your rod down, it'll become as a serpent. And in the story, he did throw the serpent down, and it was so realistic that we're told that Moses himself was scared by what he saw. And he tells him to bend down, you know, pick up the serpent by the tail, and when he did, it turned back into a staff. Then he tells him, put your hand in your cloak, and when you pull it out, it'll be like snow. It'll be covered in leprosy. If he puts it back in and pulls it back out, it would be back restored. And then he says, if that doesn't convince them, just take some water, pour it onto the ground, and when it hits the dry ground, that water will turn to blood. So he was given what he needed to do to convince people other than just his words. Now, some hesitate to do this today. Do we have this excuse in us today? Maybe it's the fear of failure, the fear of rejection, fear of being ostracized, the fear of being laughed at. You believe that? That's 2,000 years ago. That doesn't apply today. And so those fears prevent an awful lot of us from even trying. But God has given us many proofs. Now, I can't put my hand in my coat and have it be leprous, but we have all that we need in the Word. God's Word produces faith. Romans 10, verses 17 says, so faith comes from hearing, and hearing through the Word of God, the Word of Christ. Preaching the gospel is the ordinary means of salvation. There's nothing miraculous about it. Faith in Christ is the result of hearing the Word. If the hearer believes the message, salvation then is produced. The Word is full of signs and accounts of the miracles of Christ that are sufficient to convince those who are honestly seeking the truth. John chapter 20, verses 30 through 31 says, this is John kind of writing, this is towards the close of the book. Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. John says that what was written by him is intended to prove several things. It gives full proof of the divinity of Christ, that he was the Son of God. It gives proof that he is the promised Messiah, that he really did suffer, die on the cross, and rose again from the dead, and that through him, every believer might have eternal life. With all these things at our fingertips, how can we justify sitting by waiting for someone else to spread the gospel? Their answer is, we can't. The responsibility belongs to all of us. In other words, you got this. All right, now the fourth excuse, I'm having a little fun with this, but basically Moses is saying, me no speak good. He says in verse 10, but Moses said to the Lord, oh my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you've spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue. Moses says, I'm just not a very good speaker. I'm not eloquent. I read a lot of things. You know, did he have a speech impediment? Did he just have a hard time putting his thoughts into words, or was he shy? Some people thought, well, he's been gone from Egypt for 40 years. He doesn't even know how to speak Hebrew. He's not going to be able to talk to the children of Israel in their language. But you know, he probably didn't speak Hebrew much when he was in Egypt, especially being a member of the royal family, but being raised by his mother, he was surely exposed to it. But he's been in Midian for 40 years. I took 2 years of French in high school 34 years ago, and I don't remember much of it. But then again, it wasn't my native tongue either. But, you know, this may have been part of it. But whatever it was, we're told that it wasn't important, because God knew what kind of speaker Moses was going to be. He already knew that. He knows everything about man. Verse 11 and 12, he says, then the Lord said to him, who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute, or deaf, or seeing, or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth, and teach you what you shall speak. God says, listen, I'm the person that gave you the mouth that you have. If I gave you that mouth, I can surely lead you into what needs to be said. I can teach you and make sure that what needs to be said will be said. Again, God promises to be with Moses. He will teach him what to say. Chapter 4, verse 12 says, now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak. He even sends Aaron to be his spokesman. He says, Aaron will be with you. 14 and 15 says, "And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, 'Is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. Behold, he is coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. You shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you both what to do. He shall speak for you to the people. He shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him.'" Many of us try to use this same excuse today. We say we're not good speakers, so someone else should go and teach. But being a poor speaker didn't stop Paul. How could I say that? Because we're told. In fact, a lot of people thought Paul was a horrible speaker. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10. "For they say, his letters are weighty and strong, but his bodily presence is weak, and his speech of no account." People thought Paul was a horrible deliverer of a message. You think of all the different times in the book of Acts that he stood up in, Mars Hill, or, before any of the different courts or magistrates, that he had an opportunity to lay out why he believed and why he was doing what he was doing. He got by okay. People got him thrown in prison. He must have been doing it okay. They understood what he was saying to them. So we can make the same mistake that Moses made. We can start thinking that our presentation or our delivery isn't very good, or maybe I can't be witty and throw in jokes and make people pay attention, or all these things are not as important as just spreading the gospel. At the very least, what you can do is you can set up a Bible study. You can ask someone if they'd like to study the Bible. And I know at West Carrollton there are men, and I'm sure there are men here. The Bible class you had this morning, a lot of good comments. There are people that know their Bible here. If you don't feel comfortable leading that Bible class, there are men here today that'll do it. And you know what? If you set up a couple of these and you start participating in these Bible studies with your friends and your coworkers, it might just rub off on you. You might become comfortable enough. You might become more familiar with what you need to be sharing with these people that, You can do it yourself. So there is something we all can do to spread the gospel. In other words, you got this. You can do this. All right, so before I get to the fifth excuse, I just want to tell one story that I think really sums up what's happening here. My boss is a man named Mike. I've worked with him for, probably 4 years, and really directly for the last year and a half, he and I have worked very closely together. He has this thought, and I guess if you know what Six Sigma is, I only kind of know what it is, but it's a training method for a lot of different ways. And I guess it's something about asking the five whys. If you're trying to get some information out of somebody, and you ask them, and you're not real satisfied with the answer they give because you think they're maybe not telling you out all the that really is the truth, or maybe they're holding something back. You say, "Well, why? Oh, you have that project? No, I didn't get it done. Well, why? Oh, well, I ran out of time. Well, why'd you run out of time? Oh, well, I had some other things I was also working on. Well, why? And you go on, and you get down to, well, the reason why is because they wasted all afternoon talking to their coworkers or whatever the case may be. If you ask why enough, you chip away until you get to the real reason. And I say that because that's kind of what's happening here. Moses has given four excuses, and God says, "I'll help you. You've got this." But it comes to the fifth excuse. We find the real reason why Moses is making excuses. He says, "Send someone else, please." Verse 13 says, "But he said, 'Oh my Lord, please send someone else. I don't want to do this job,' is what he's telling the Lord." This really shows that all these excuses that Moses was making were not about his weaknesses, but rather about his unwillingness to do what God is asking him to do. Now, at this point in time, verse 14 says, Verse 14 says that God's anger is kindled against Moses, and he sternly tells him what he will do. I'm frankly surprised it took God this long to get angry at Moses. He had heard all these excuses. Now, once again, tempered with his anger, we can see God's compassion and his mercy. Far from being alone, at that very moment, Aaron was coming to meet Moses to assist him in this task. This reveals that many of our own excuses are nothing more than a cover for our own unwillingness to obey. So the next time we say, I can't, are we really saying, I won't? But we've got this. We're not alone. We've got brothers and we've got sisters of like-minded faith. They will help us as well. We've got the word that he's given to us. You've got this. There's nothing that God asks any of us to do that with a little bit of study, with a little bit of effort, with a little bit of help, that each and every one of us can do. Now, the Lord will not be talking to us through a burning bush. I'm pretty confident in that. But the very same thing is true with us today. We offer many, many excuses. But they're just hiding our true feelings. We would prefer that God just send anyone else to do what we've been asked to do ourselves. We don't want to do what God is calling us to do. Now, I talked about the wrath of the Lord earlier. Now, we saw the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. It's kindled against anyone who doesn't live up to what they are called to do. We know that Moses finally did stop offering excuses, and he did go and do what God asked him to do. So we also have two choices. We can either go do what we know needs to be done, that's spreading the word, teaching and bringing others to Christ, or we can have the anger of the Lord kindled against us. There's no other option here. We do what we know we need to do, but the Lord's going to be very, very angry with us. We need to realize that we'll be held accountable. The story of Jonah. Everybody knows Jonah was in the belly of a fish. Whether it was a whale or not, that's another story. But he was in the belly of a great fish. Why did he end up in the belly of a great fish? Because just like Moses, Jonah was told to go to Nineveh, which was the capital of Assyria, so the Assyrian people. And he was told to go convict them of their sins, tell them, you know, preach to them that they needed to turn away from this sinful activity. But if Nineveh was this way, Jonah went that way. And we're told that the Lord created a great fish that swallowed up Jonah. And if my memory is correct, it's that he spent 3 days and nights in the belly of that fish. I wouldn't want to spend 3 minutes, but he spent 3 days there. And when he came out of the belly, he did what he was told to do. He went on to Nineveh. And those of you who know the entire story, what happened when he went to Nineveh? Did they run him out and did they torture him and stone him? No, they listened to him. They believed what he told them. And they responded to the message that Jonah was told by God to go do. So, if the message is delivered with conviction and with sincerity, people will respond to it. So, collectively, we have this. We can do this. It's not something that is out of our abilities. So if you're here this morning and you haven't dedicated your life to the Lord by believing in his name and in that he is deity, that he is the Son of God, confessing his name, repenting and turning away from the sin that's in your life, and being buried in the waters of baptism, you have that opportunity today. If you have a need of any kind, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.